Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, December 21st, 2013. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be your host. With a number of significant strategic events taking place this last week, the lack of a coherent leadership in the mainstream institutions of our nation has put us on a course of war, possibly thermonuclear war, and a blowout crash of the economy far worse than 2008. These are not abstract predictions. These are actually scientific forecasts, which are based on the developments that I'm going to report to you in a moment, but which come from Lyndon LaRouche, whose forecasting record on these things has been better than sterling. On the war front, we have this continuing Anglo-Dutch policy of their puppets, including Barack Obama, to continue with an insane encirclement policy against Russia and China. You have Japan announcing they're going to rearm, and NATO, it's reported, was seeking to use a European Union treaty with Ukraine as an opportunity to place forward-based forces right on the border with Russia. For the moment, it appears that Putin has once again outfoxed the empire with his diplomacy with Ukraine, and both the Russians and Chinese are upgrading their forces. Meanwhile, Obama and his fellow stooges like Angela Merkel, the newly installed continuing chancellor in Germany, are pressing ahead with more provocations. On the economic front, we had the spectacle of the outgoing Ben Bernanke announcing that the Fed is planning on tapering, that is, cutting back slightly on its monthly bailout to Wall Street and City of London banks. The problem is the financial oligarchy has no other option but more of the same: bailouts, bail-ins, and killer austerity. None of this will help the economy, but it may buy a little bit more time for these bankrupt banks. We also saw a Democratic-Republican deal on the budget, which demonstrates two points we have been making. First, all these budget debates are a fraud because neither side has the slightest idea how to fix the economy. That is, the accounting manipulation of income versus expenditures is the foolish way to look at a budget. The only sane way is to look at a budget from the standpoint of how do you produce more revenue, more wealth from the physical economy so that you are producing more than you're spending. And that never was a consideration in the Patty Murray, Paul Ryan talks, and it certainly has never entered the otherwise blank mind of Barack Obama. Secondly, the second point on this budget deal is that the Obama Democrats, who are the Wall Street Democrats, are in a lockstep agreement with the Wall Street Republicans. Protect the wealthiest by protecting the too big to fail banks, the insurance companies, and all the Wall Street speculators, while imposing murderous austerity on everyone else. Now, our program today is not going to take up the horrible situation we're in other than to discuss how to fix it, because there is an option. The future remains to be determined. That's an interesting thing about human history, is that there are no predetermined events as long as individuals act with courage and creativity. And our guest today is someone who has demonstrated both the courage and the creativity necessary to provide leadership to give us an alternative future than that of the genocidal policies of Queen Elizabeth and her various agents. So joining us today will be Keisha Rogers. And Keisha, welcome to the program.
Hi, Harley. Thanks.
Now, you announced, a couple weeks ago, a campaign for the U.S. Senate in Texas. And this, of course, represents a very significant development. Why don't you give us a sense of what's happened since your initial announcement?
Well, I think to put it in perspective, what you just laid out, really, in terms of strategic situation and what we face, this campaign and my campaign to run for the U.S. Senate comes at a very moment where the void in leadership has to be taken on. we have to have a sense right now that somebody's going to stand up for the population who is being killed by these murderous policies of the capitulation going on in the Democratic Party, and also in the Republican Party, to make deals at the expense of the lives of the population. And the only solution that's going to get us out of this mess and out of this crisis is someone with the courage and guts to stand up and say, Wall Street has to go, has to take a hike. And that's what I have launched my campaign on, the theme and the fight that is absolutely necessary, which has to be that if we don't get Glass-Steagall through now, the consequences are already showing themselves. And I think what people can get a sense of in from the standpoint of the last two campaigns that I've waged, that with the House races for the 22nd Congressional District, what was the first thing that people saw in that campaign? It was that I was willing and will continue to be willing to take on the British Empire. The London Economist wrote that during my congressional election to save NASA, impeach Obama, I made it clear that the enemy was not the Republicans, it was not the Democrats. It was the British Empire that seeks to push a policy of depopulation on the planet and to push a policy that's going to kill billions of people. And now we are seeing this become very clear in everything that's happening right now with the breakdown. But I think what people are getting a sense of with my launching of the Senate election and what I would like to do in the Senate race is to take this fight to the next level. And I want to be the voice that's going to go out there and say, look, the commitment to the future as Kennedy had intended has to once again be our commitment.
And, you know, I think, Keisha, it's important to note that this is not really ultimately about the Democratic or Republican parties, except right. to the extent that they reflect the degeneration of both the political institutions of this country, but also the thinking of the common person who choose their party as they choose their sports team or, you know, their NASCAR favorite drivers. And what's been lost sight of is these broad strategic issues that will determine the future. And, you know, in your two campaigns, and for those who don't know, you have twice won the Democratic nomination in the 22nd District of Texas, running against Obama, running against the Democratic Party leadership, but running for the people. And in both cases, despite money spent against you and full efforts by the Democratic Party, you got over 50% of the vote each time in the Democratic primary. So lest people think this is just simply a Democrat versus Republican thing, I think it's important that you emphasized from the outset that this is about where the country's going. And, you know, the political parties are going to have to change in order to address that.
Right. And I would just say, you know, I just came back from Washington, D.C. First of all, I went to just recently to Memphis to the National NBCSL Conference. And there I really had a sense in organizing around my campaign and telling people what my intention was to break the Wall Street grip from the Democratic Party. This really had a sigh of relief, even on the elected officials who were at this conference who didn't have the courage to say that when they knew it needed to be said. And this is the problem, and this is what Mr. LaRouche has been identifying as the cowardice, but more so the capitulation to want to be accepted, to go along, to get along. And, you know, that's what people like President John F. Kennedy, that's what Dr. King and others, real leaders, avoided, knowing that if you're going to actually lead the nation, you have to be willing to tell the truth. And so it was, you know, interesting to think about, you know, going into the NBCSL meetings or talking to individuals and getting their perspective that what they have done in continuing to stick with this president what this means for their constituents. It's not acceptable. I mean, this is a policy of murder. And you sit back and you watch places like Detroit and their pensions being slashed and people being sent to the slaughter. I mean, that's really what's happening right now. And so that's why this campaign in here in the state of Texas takes on a profound national fight, because it's not just about what's happening in Texas. It's about how you're going to respond as a leader to the demands and the call of action, which is required of you in this very dire time for the nation. And I mean, I think that we can look at Texas as an example in history where there have been great people, Texas Congress members and others who have stood up against this oligarchy or against this Wall Street financial elite and apparatus and said and went in and took it on. And I think we can continue that legacy and that tradition and actually stand up in a way that people need to be given the leadership and the courage to understand that they can do the same thing. And that's what I intend to do.
Well, I want to get back to Texas a little bit later, but I want to start with the broad themes that you're bringing. You've already mentioned Glass-Steagall and the fight against Wall Street. I'm assuming that is the number one issue right now, that we have to push through Glass-Steagall. And to do it, we're going to have to break Wall Street, because Wall Street is saying that Glass-Steagall is a life and death issue for them.
That's right. And this is the only fight that's worth waging right now. This has to be anybody who is qualified or who is serious about leading this nation. If they're not willing to break with Wall Street, I mean, this is why it's so important right now. You look at to take the gloves off, as Mr. LaRusha has made it clear, and I am fully capable and willing to lead this fight on the Democratic Party. We got to turn the Democratic Party back to the party, the anti-Wall Street party. That's the point. These guys don't deserve a dime. They cannot continue to be bailed out, bailed in, at the expense of the livelihood and the lives of the population. And, you know, this is not just about some nice fight, oh, you don't like Wall Street or you do like Wall Street. If you're saying, as, for example, Hillary Clinton is saying that the fight against Wall Street is childish and ridiculous, and anybody who's going against Wall Street, don't worry about it, I'm going to protect you. And other Democrats are going along with this and protecting Obama and protecting Wall Street. They have to be reprimanded. They have to be called out for this. Because, I mean, there's no excuses for defending this apparatus whose sole intention is to loot and kill the population. What does Wall Street do or represent that has any bearing on real productivity, or it actually gives back to the increase in production of society? Nothing. And to say because you want the money, because you want the money or you want to be accepted or whatever it is that people are doing, that they're capitulating to this, is insane. But you take on the reverse side, an example of certain courage that has been shown in this fight for Glass-Steagall, which is you take the fact that you just had Congressman Tierney in Massachusetts and Congressman Walter Jones in North Carolina come together in a bipartisan bill for introducing a new Glass-Steagall bill, which is very important because this is a carbon copy, I guess you want to say, of the Senate bill by Elizabeth Warren, and Congressman Tierney is from Massachusetts. So this really puts the fight right up front that, you know, you have a continued bipartisan fight, and that people are recognizing that the opposition coming from Wall Street, coming from the American Bankers Association, to try to deter or break down or stop the motion that we we have Mr. LaRouche, our political policy committee, our candidates have put in place for reinstating Glass-Steagall. People know that that cannot be allowed to happen. And I think the fight has now become head-on that either we're going to have Glass-Steagall or we're not going to make it.
Let me just say on that point that we now have the documents being circulated by the American Bankers Association, which are one lie after another about Glass-Steagall and attempting to say that the banks, essentially whitewashing the banks. Now, it should be noted that even though the ABA, the American Bankers Association, asserts itself as an organization for all the whole banking industry, it really represents about 6 to 10 banks. But they are so frightened. And this is something that's really important. And I want you to, if you want to say something more on this, you should, because look, Glass-Steagall has the support of a significant section of the Democratic Party congressmen. A lot of Republicans would support it, except for the bankers. And at this point, if we don't break that power, as even Gordon Brown, the former Prime Minister of Britain, announced 2 days ago, we're going to have a crash much bigger than 2008. So if you want to say something more on that, please do, because I think this is a crucial point to get across. And this is where there isn't the leadership. There are people who lean toward it, support it, but they won't fight for it yet.
I'll give you an example. Look at, we just had some of our representatives go into the Washington, D.C., NCSL National Conference, state legislators. And one of the primary sponsors of, and there was an interview done on the LaRouche PAC website that people can go and see, Andrea Bolden, who is a state representative out of Maine. When the primary sponsors of the state of the resolution for the National Conference of State Legislators, she went in there and took on this Wall Street apparatus. And most of these other, pretty much all of the other state legislators backed down and capitulated and crumbled at the sight of these Wall Street cronies coming in and trying to manipulate and push bully tactics and scare them. And, you know, they even tried the same thing on her, where they told her, you know, you should have come to us first. You don't want to do this. You know, you got to stay in your territory. You're taking on something that you don't have any idea what you're doing, and tried to treat her as though she had no confidence in what was going on. That she didn't want to mess with Wall Street. She didn't want to take this on. And that's what you're dealing with. And unless people have the guts to say, you're not going to bully us. Look, your system is bankrupt. What the hell, what do you have that's going to make it better for society? Nothing. And so you're saying we should keep you bailed out so that we can cut our people's pensions and our savings, and, I mean, cut their Social Security and everything else for the livelihood of the population. And this interview that she did, it was very, very calm, but it told the truth. And it said, this is what they're telling me, and this is what they're doing to us, and I'm going to let you know this. And so it put it out there, and so Wall Street knows that the fight is on. And, you know, it had a similar, you know, situation. Well, I would say, you know, on the reverse side, you know, you think of people who capitulate and they become cowards to not taking on this fight. I had a gentleman in one of these meetings, a state legislator, say, well, we saw what the bankers did in the legislative meeting. You can't take these guys on. And I fought with him and I said, you can take them on. They have no power. They're losing their power. So I think that's the fight right now, is that this system of Wall Street is bankrupt. With Glass-Steagall, you can bring these guys down. Their whole worthless gambling debt, their mortgage-backed securities, their worthless assets, or so forth, are they have no value. And I think the real question is, the Glass-Steagall fight has to be a principled fight of breaking people of this insanity of, I have to hold on to my money system. I need that money. I need that Wall Street money. That's what the Democrats are saying. That's what the Republicans are saying, and why they won't tell the truth about what needs to be done.
Well, and Keisha, we had another example of the power of Wall Street with the so-called Volcker Rule that was released about 10 days ago. You know, the Volcker, we may get to him in a few moments because he was a pivotal figure in the destruction of Texas farmers and Texas small business and Texas industry with his high interest rates when he was Federal Reserve Chairman in the early 1980s. But Volcker supposedly was going to end proprietary trading. And this was going to be put to teeth in the Dodd-Frank bill. Now, what we find is that it has more loopholes and evasions than any bill that's ever been written. And the bankers were saying it's too tough. But as I wrote in a column the other day, they were laughing all the way to the bank. Because what they did is they essentially wrote the rules so that they have no teeth, no hard and fast rules. And the argument they use, and this gets to one of the other points that you make in terms of physical production, is that you can't really tell the difference between a trade by an investment banker that's purely for the profit of the investment banker and a trade that's done to hedge risk. And therefore, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't come up with rules. Now, I would say the rule should be then we shouldn't have any of that trading. But I think that this is another example of the power that you're talking about of Wall Street to bend Washington, in fact, control Washington to its will.
That's true, and I mean, that's what we have to break. But I think that in order to do that, it gets to a higher a principle of people's understanding of what our constitutional republic was founded on. And you know, the commitment to actually return and fight for that principle of a national credit system, that a monetary system, the financial system that's been put in place by the London oligarchy, by Wall Street, is a fake system. It has no real value, intrinsic value in it. It doesn't produce anything. It doesn't actually help your farmers to sow productive crops. It doesn't help your industry. It doesn't do any of these things. What all it does is to put out worthless paper or money, which is not pushing the creative and productive powers of the human mind. And very few leaders in our nation's history have actually understood and fought for that principle in which our nation was truly founded on the production of physical economy, real economy.
That's something I want to get to right now, because I just want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Keisha Rogers. She is a candidate for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate in Texas. She will be on the ballot in March. She needs your help. If you're in Texas or you know people in Texas, get them to listen to this program, send them a link to it, get them on it. And Keisha, why don't you give out your website so people can find you?
Yes, that website is Keisha, that's going to be KeishaRogers.com, KeishaRogers.com.
Nice and simple. Yes. Now, Keisha, on the point you were just making, the other theme that helped you, or actually there were two other themes that I think won you the nomination on the Democratic primaries in the 22nd District in 2010 and 2012. One was impeaching Obama, but let's come back to that in a moment. The other was saving NASA. And when you talk about physical economy, you talk about reviving the Roosevelt-Kennedy tradition of the Democratic Party, NASA's at the heart of it. And now with the Chinese on the moon, and we can't even send a rocket up there to get takeout, you know, we're in a completely turned around situation. So I'd like you to talk a little bit about your vision of the future from the standpoint of the Kennedy perspective that you've been looking into quite extensively in these last months.
Yes. Well, I think that, I mean, if you look at what President Kennedy represented in terms of what it is that you have in terms of a vision for mankind, it has to be based on a commitment to the future and knowing that you can actually intervene in and you can know and shape what's going to happen in the prospects for that future. And I think that, you know, what you look at the situation in terms of what our commitment to science, our commitment to space in the United States has represented under President Kennedy, and why that was one of the first things that the enemies of President Kennedy, when they killed him, they tried so desperately and continue to do so to destroy. From President Bush down to Obama, they have completely, you know, particularly President Obama, more so than anybody, has led a massive slashing of the most vital components of our space program, which is not just about a space program in terms of, you know, sending people into outer space or any of that matter, but it's really about your commitment to the protection and defense of man in the universe and on Earth. And that's when I went to fight for the full funding of NASA. I mean, this is not something that's a discretionary budget or that should come as you know, at a whim when the person in power, in leadership, or in the presidency, wherever, feels that it's important. This has to be the top priority for our nation. And you look at where our priorities are wrong when you have, you know, what just happened in China is a magnificent development where they've decided, no, in order for there to be a shift in terms of the direction of economic progress and scientific progress for the nation, to deal with the massive amounts of people who are in poor conditions, the only way you're going to do that is to take the fight, to take the direction of the entire society to another level. And that's what Kennedy had intended with the Apollo mission. And the Chinese have made it clear that they have looked back at, you know, what the was set forth in motion 37 years ago. You know, this was 37 years ago that we had the last man, Jing Chernin, on the moon, last footsteps on the moon with the one of the last Apollo missions. And I think that, you know, what the Chinese are doing right now, what this really signifies is one thing, which is, I mean, it's very clear, to make this very clear, is you have a certain direction which mankind can go in that is very, very clear, which is we can move with the direction that Asia is taking, the Chinese, the Russians, and Ukraine and other nations, to say we don't want this Wall Street, we don't want this Euro system of bailouts and bail-ins. We don't want the quantitative easing policy. We want advancements in science for mankind. And I think that's absolutely the direction we have to go. And the United States should follow, not only follow, should lead in that process. And the alternative is deadly. It's that we're going to go along with these bailout policies. We're going to go along with the slashing of that commitment to the future. And we're going to continue to allow for the policies that's going to lead to the threat of thermonuclear war instead of collaboration among nations and the destruction of the planet. So I think, I mean, I think you can only be clear on these things by recognizing that the choice before us depends on what the population or what people are going to be willing to do in terms of recognizing the beauty in their own ability to shape and to know and fight for that better future. And that's what that's what I get excited by.
Well, I don't think you're the only one. And I think you're also inspiring people because the commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President Kennedy brought out two different kind of responses. The response from the probably from those who either killed him or supported the killing of him, namely the British Empire, was this guy was a rich playboy. He was a reckless leader, almost got us into wars. There's no evidence that he would have done anything good. And there's the only reason he's famous is because he was assassinated. On the other side, what we've seen is the inspirational messages from Kennedy that indicated he knew there had to be a change in the future. He understood the danger of thermonuclear war. As he said, we're all under a nuclear sword of Damocles. He understood, on the other hand, that you can move nations by inspiring the young to great projects and great missions. Now, it's my sense that we are tapping into that, and the American people are responding in spite of the cynical, lying stories on Kennedy. Are you finding that?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I was thinking about, you know, the demand for President Kennedy's profiles and courage and people to really understand that, you know, I one of my the quotes that I took for him for the theme is my campaign, because I was, you know, this is really, you know, really what we have to do in terms of Kennedy. Kennedy said, always in his profiles and courage, always do what is right, regardless of whether it is popular. And, you know, I think that, that people respond to that because you look at, you know, that people think that it was popular when Kennedy gave a speech in Rice Stadium, and he talked about the mission for going to the moon and getting there in the next decade. And we're going to do these things not because they're easy, but because they're hard. And, people remember that, and they remember the challenge that, that Kennedy posed to people, that they were willing to take on this challenge because they knew the power that we had as Americans, the power that we had as human beings, that we, there was nothing that we couldn't do. And I think that that's what people get excited by. And I can tell you, going out and talking to people, I had a gentleman come up to me yesterday. I was at a table deployment for my campaign. And, you know, this was a person who actually considered himself to be a Republican or conservative or whatever. And so when I talked to him, I said, look, it's not about parties. You got to back me up because we're going to revive this JFK tradition. And when I said John F. Kennedy, and we're going to bring his legacy and his spirit and vision back to life, this guy literally almost broke down in tears. And so it was very moving, and he was really inspired and excited by what we're going to do with this campaign, and not just that I'm going to do it as a candidate, but that this is his mission, and this is his fight. And that's what I want to tell people. Look, this is not just about my campaign. This is your camp. This is the people's campaign. This is everybody's fight. And, you know, then people can break with, oh, I'm supposed to identify with this party, or I'm supposed to identify with that party, but really get a sense of that you have to identify as being American, being a true citizen of this republic.
Well, Keisha, I think that brings us to the third major theme of your campaign, which is that we have to remove Barack Obama before he destroys the Constitution and the United States. This was a major theme of your congressional race. And, you know, people who tried to belittle your campaign or make fun of you ignored something important, which is that the Democrats in the 22nd District of Texas knew very well you were calling for Obama's impeachment, and they voted for you. And I think this is something that is underestimated, especially by the cowards and the opportunists in the Congress who say, oh, you can't impeach Obama because the Senate will never vote for it. So how do you see taking this direct challenge to the people to join you as soldiers in the fight to get Obama out of there?
Well, I'd say that, you know, people have to get out, get from in front of their television stations, get out of, you know, whatever they think is their so-called comfort zone, and really take this fight to heart. That, you know, we need people out on the streets with us. I can tell you, when I won the two congressional nominations in 2010-2012, going out there as a Democrat to impeach Obama and the full funding of NASA, and the Democratic Party ostracized and, you know, said, I'm not going to get a penny of money, we didn't win that fight by trying to go with so-called traditional or, you know, tactics of campaigning. We are what would be tactics of, you know, just going along with the party flow. We said, no, we're going to take this fight to the forgotten man. We're going to take this fight to the people. And we went out and we knocked on doors, and we talked to people. Look, this is what's being done to you. This is what you have to do to fight it. This is what the solution is. The solution is we're going to bankrupt these Wall Street, this whole Wall Street apparatus. We're going to actually revive a spirit for a commitment to NASA and to science and progress. And, you know, one of the powerful things about the campaign is its ability to recruit young people. You know, you look at young people, I think it was just a poll between the ages of 18 to 25 years old, 26 years old, 52% nationally have said that they want this president impeached. So,
and that's,
you know,
a big turnaround.
Huh?
That's a big turnaround because it was the 18 to 30-year-olds who voted 64% for Obama.
Absolutely. And now they're saying, wait a minute, this guy is spying on us. You know, you have Benghazi. You have, you know, young people losing everything, can't find a job. I was just talking to a guy. You know, you people have this all the time. Who had, you know, young people have degrees, 2-3 degrees, and they're busting tables. Or, you know, they just can't find a job at all. But so that's a real big turnaround. But those people, what they need to know is not just that there's another election, but that they're going to be taking charge and responsibility for a solution, turning the situation around. And so that's what, you know, I would call on people to do. That's what we're going to continue to do, is to go out and educate people around a real commitment to, I think you would say, a real commitment to the identity, which is going to give us, once again, a sense of nation that we can be proud of. And that starts with going out and educating people. What was our commitment to classical culture, classical education? What has been our commitment under people such as President Franklin Roosevelt and President John F. Kennedy to these great ideas? And that's what people are joining my campaign, and what I would call on people to join the campaign and to get excited by. But we need people out on the street. You got to talk to your friends. You got to go knock on doors. And I can say Texas is a very big state, and this is going to be the flagship campaign for the nation. And so, yes, if there are people listening wherever you are in Texas, or you have family members, tell them, get in contact with our office and be ready to come out and fight.
And really, there's only a little more than 2 months because it's an early March primary election. Keisha, I want to just throw one more thing to you to comment on, which is this difference between the Democrats under John F. Kennedy and under this green fascism and Wall Street austerity fascism of Obama. When Obama was in South Africa for the Mandela service the other day. He was trying to wrap himself in the mantle of African development. But, you know, John Kennedy, when he went to Africa, he explicitly attacked the colonial system and called for massive economic development. At the same time, he was talking in the United States about the need to have as much as 80% of our electricity by the year 2000 coming from nuclear power. Now, when Obama went to South Africa, I believe it was in the spring, he told students there, well, actually Kennedy in the late 50s, when he went to Africa, he said, "We support your aspirations for an American-style standard of living." Obama completely contradicted that by telling them that if they want cars, if they want air conditioning, they will overheat the planet. So one of the things that Lyndon LaRouche has always emphasized is that Texas had two aspects to it. One was anti-Wall Street, but directly connected to that was pro-technology. You can't really live in Texas without being pro-technology because it's a very tough climate. So I'd like you to comment on this difference, both from the standpoint of the colonial versus anti-colonial policy, Obama as the colonialist and Kennedy as the anti-colonial, but also just in terms of this question of the green technology, because this is directly related to the major themes you're bringing up.
Right. And this green environmental policy, people have to get an understanding that this is a policy that's intended to kill, that's anti-progress and puts, as the founders of it have said, there's limits to growth. But that the thing that really differentiates a real policy toward progress and scientific commitment for development, as we saw with President John F. Kennedy, is that, you know, he said that, you know, you look at his commitment to the North American Water and Power Alliance. Kennedy, we had a beautiful speeches by President Kennedy speaking at the Pueblo Dam, and commitment to the future and why we build these dams and why we have to have a commitment to nuclear power and to a science driver for the nation, and why we have to have a commitment to a fusion economy. That you know, that was one of the things, one of the key things that the enemies of Kennedy wanted to destroy, was particularly these budget cutters who said, we don't need to pay for the advancements in the space program and science. The other thing that they really took on or cut was to say that the green environmentalist agenda, say that it was more important to protect the salmon or any whatever than it was to actually build these necessary great projects for the advancement of the nation. And I mean, that's what Obama is, that's what he's run by. You have two factions of destruction. One is the Wall Street financier oligarchy, and it's the same thing as the green environmentalist agenda. And when the president went to, when Obama went to Africa and told Africans that they don't need progress, or even told Americans, well, you know, we should just stop thinking or worrying about this fusion thing. We should just have our window sills, or, you know, our solar panels and things we should just, you know, limit the commitment toward progress. And what you can see in terms of the difference in these two policies is that one seeks to advance mankind to an upward level of allowing for a commitment for protecting and defending the planet. And the other one, the green environmentalist policy, is a policy that says we're going to reduce the world's population as the Queen intends to less than 1 billion people. And I mean, I think it's very clear that this green environmentalist policy is a destructive one that has to be stopped.
Absolutely. And I, from spending some time in Europe recently, you can see the problems with the German nuclear exit, the shutdown of nuclear power. But what you're really looking at is, as you've said, an attack on the human mind and human creativity. Now, Keisha, we have probably a little more than 12 minutes left of the program. I wanted to come back to this question of the role of Texas in the country. You know, I had the privilege of knowing two people who worked very closely with President Kennedy. One was Henry B. Gonzalez, who was a courageous congressman from San Antonio, Texas, a Democrat, who fought Wall Street every step of the way. And the other was Senator Ralph Yarborough, who was the desk mate of John Kennedy in the Senate. And Yarborough was another anti-Wall Street Democrat. He was a senator. He was targeted by George Bush directly. And you know, you have in Texas, because of the necessity for federal credit, for agriculture, for infrastructure, whether it's water, whether it's power, Texas was sort of a test case of the progress that could be made. And now you see Texas, which is parts of it are drying up so that you can't produce. I assume that you're, as much as you can get around, you will get around to these various parts of the state and take up these issues, but from the standpoint you're talking about. So what are your plans for the campaign?
Well, it's interesting that you were talking about these leaders, Henry B. Gonzalez and Yarborough, and because when I ran for the state Democratic Party chairmanship, I really channeled and looked at the history of the fight that these Texans actually waged. And you had a real fight, even going back, and I was just looking at another Texan who was a congressmember back in the 1920s and 30s, who was the head of the Banking Finance Committee, and within for about 27 terms, I think it was like 48 years, Pat Reitman. And, you know,
Wright Patman.
I'm sorry. Yes, Wright Patman.
Yeah, Wright Patman. Yeah.
And you look at, you know, from Henry B. Gonzalez and Pat Yarborough and all of these guys, what did they have in common? And, you know, as Texans, that they were willing to go in there and kick Wall Street where it hurt. And that's what they did. Is, you know, when Wright Patman went in and said, "I'm going to, you know, take down Andrew Mellon and this whole Mellon Company Wall Street apparatus," as a freshman, when nobody else had the guts to do so, or Henry B. Gonzalez, as a Texan, to go in the Congress and one of the first to bring in Lyndon LaRouche in our organization to work with him on going after the Wall Street derivatives. So we see a sort of tradition in Texas of people having a no-holds-bar, real, I'm going to go in there and get the job done and take the gloves off on this Wall Street control within the Congress. And, you know, that's what my campaign and what I will continue to do is, you got to have people and continue to revive or stand on that tradition, that we need more people with the courage to go in there and to clean out the trash, should we say, inside of Congress, and to actually provide some real leadership. And that's, I was thinking back to, you know, that's what I ran on as a real crucial campaign in 2005-2006. When I ran as for the Democratic Party chairmanship in the state of Texas here, to revive that legacy of the forgotten man, the legacy of, that was really set in motion by President Franklin Roosevelt, to revive the FDR JFK tradition in the Democratic Party, that still stands. That has to be our commitment. and to channel the fight that has been waged by, you know, great leaders in Texas, and to turn the situation back around. You know, Texas, you know, has been committed to those principles. And it wasn't just about, you know, it wasn't just that John F. Kennedy or President Roosevelt were quote-unquote Democratic presidents. They were presidents for the entire nation. They didn't just represent their party. They represented the principles for a commitment to actually defend and defend our Constitution and what it stands for. Unlike what we've seen President Obama, who has been in complete violation of the Constitution, and Bush as a Republican before them. There's nothing different about these two. And so I think that, you know, we can take Texas as a very crucial place for this fight to be waged, because that's where you can really see a legacy. And we can make clear that we are committed once again to restoring a victory, a triumph for what was done to President Kennedy, reversing that in a sense, and saying that we have to commit ourselves once again to his vision, to his legacy. And it's starting here in Texas, really, really means something to that. And it really,
you know,
means
part
something.
Of,
yeah, go ahead.
Part of this tradition was also at the center of a fight in 1908 when farmers insisted that Lyndon LaRouche be allowed to address the Texas Democratic Convention, the state convention in San Antonio in 1980. And Lynn only had about 4 or 5 minutes to speak. But what he said is that if the party does not reverse the policy of ultra-liberalism, of free trade, of attacking the farm sector, and of going with the green environmentalism, the Texas Democratic Party will cease to be a power in the state. Now, at the time, the Democratic Party held every single statewide office. Within a decade, that had been reversed, exactly as LaRouche had warned. And I think today, when the question comes up, and this is what the last question I have for you, because we're running short on time. The Democratic Party, to the extent it exists as some kind of a functional organization, is going to go out and say, you're not a real Democrat. And I think the real point we can make to them is that if you look at the history of the Democratic Party, the positive history that you just outlined, and then you look at your record and what you've done and what you've said, you have the right to say to them, they should get the hell out of the party because they no longer agree with those principles. I think that's a very strong point, and I think it will resonate with a lot of people who left the Democratic Party in the 80s and joined the Republicans.
Yes, and you can already see that. And you know, the commitment to just go around and to say, we're going to rebuild that coalition of the producers, the producers, the ones who said that, you know, used to be our farmers, our industry, our you know, our scientists, all of these people who we had a certain connection with the Democratic Party under traditions of President John F. Kennedy and President Franklin Roosevelt. And, you know, I go and I talk, speak at various events, whether sometimes they might be Republican events or other events, and these people, they would say, you know, I was a Democrat, and I used to be inspired like you, and I used to know, and I used to be inspired by President John F. Kennedy, and that's why I was a Democrat, and now I'm a Republican. But they see, well, wait a minute, well, why did I do that? Why didn't I actually stay and fight and say that, you know, we have to commit ourselves again to these principles, to this vision? So I think that's the key right now, is that we have to remind people of what was taken away from them and how they have to fight to get it back. And this fight, I must say this, is first and foremost, in order to get the job done, you have to take on the fight where it needs to be waged, and that has to be in the Democratic Party. Unless the Democrats break with Obama, break with this Wall Street apparatus, then the nation has very little chance of surviving. It's not going to happen necessarily with the Republicans, because it has to be a fight that, first and foremost, the Democrats have to take on this challenge and break with Obama. The Democrats have to revive this JFK, FDR tradition, and it has to be from the standpoint that Wall Street has no place in this nation and has to go now. And then we can actually have a government that returns to a commitment of the principle of by and for the people again. And I think that's where it stands.
So, Keisha, once again, why don't you give out your website? And by the way, can you take contributions yet on the website directly?
That is being set up right now, and it will be ready to go by Monday. So, but you can, I want to give a phone number out that people can call into, if that's okay. And
sure.
Get any, have any questions. Why don't we, I will give the 800 number out. For the purpose of the show here, which is 1-800-922-2907. It's 1-800-922-2907. If you look me up, you'll find me on Facebook and Twitter, and I have a YouTube account. The website address is KeishaRogers.com. So it's very simple.
Now, those of you who are listening, this is not just something that's of interest to you. This is something which will determine whether you have a future or not. And Keisha has a track record. She was basically selected by Mr. LaRouche for this campaign. And I say that meaning that that it was a selection that was mutual. Keisha talked to Lynn. Lynn liked the idea. And Lynn said, let's go with it. Because he said, we need someone who will not back down, who won't get distracted, who won't sell you out. And for all those people listening who have the typical complaint, well, you can't trust anybody, I have a question for you. Can you trust yourself? Have you acted as a good citizen lately? And if the answer to that is that you're not out there organizing with LaRouche to impeach Obama and get Glass-Steagall, then you're part of the problem. But Keisha's not going to hold that against you if you get into the fight right now. Am I right, Keisha?
That's right. So call that number and go to my website, and we need everybody in the fight.
And again, we need money because we're not going to get it from Jamie Dimon and J.P. Morgan Chase and the American Bankers Association. So the number is 800-922-2907, and I really think it's an absolute moment of truth for the American people, and that means every one of you listening, that it's not Keisha's going to do something for you. She's giving you a chance to do something for yourself and for your future. So, Keisha, thank you very much for joining us. I know you're out on the campaign trail right now, and I'll be seeing you in a few days.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, and so this is our program for today. We will be back next week with a special program. I believe Bruce Rector will be hosting. But join us every Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for the LaRouche Show. You can pick it up on the internet on LaRouchePub.com. And tell your friends, but get involved. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.